right, so good morning. As Kendrick said, I will be talking on gravitational lensing of the CMB. Before I start, let me thank Kendrick and Perimeter Institute for inviting me. It's always a pleasure to come here. Thank you all for coming. Good, so what I'm going to talk about is based on work with Professor Wayne Hu and Aurelien Benoit-Levy, and it was published in two papers and one which is almost done since Christmas, so we are working on it. Next couple weeks it should be out. Let me start with the overall introduction. We know that lambda CDM is a standard cosmological model. It's based on some idea of inflation when there are quantum fluctuations which are creating these small inhomogeneities on top of homogeneous and isotropic universe. Then there is Einstein equation, Boltzmann equation, you evolve it all in time. Eventually everything expands, everything cools, you get CMB, then eventually you get into the nonlinear regime, you get stars, you get galaxies, clusters of galaxies. And this model, as you all know, seems to work very well with the data. It fits CMB, it fits BAO, supernova, BBN. There are some tensions, but overall it seems to be very, very successful. Now, why we are still working on that, there are still some questions which you want to understand. So what is the physical nature of dark energy? Is dark matter weakly interacting massive particles? Is it something more exotic? Inflation, is it really scalar field which is slowly rolling, or is there something more complicated? And there are these tensions which I mentioned. So the most famous of these is the Hubble constant tension between the local measurements and values which are inferred from the CMB, for example. Are these tensions real, or is there some new physics in there? In this talk, we'll be focused on CMB, which you know decoupled from the plasma at the redshift of roughly 1100. And when you look at the sky, the temperature is roughly 2.7. It's everything everywhere the same. But if you really zoom in, you see these tiny 10 to minus 5 level anisotropies, for example, in the Planck satellite, where this map is from. So these photons are coming to us from the last scattering surface, roughly in a straight line. But if you look into second order effects, you get things like gravitational lensing, which is a slight bending of the trajectories of the photons because they're attracted by the large scale structure. There's some gravitational interaction, and so the statistics of the CMB, which you see, is slightly different in the experiment than there it is in the last scattering surface. Of course, Kendrick was the leading author on the paper which detected this effect for the first time. Current best in class is measurement by the Planck satellites, which have roughly 40 sigma detection of this effect. Compulsory plots, what actually gravitational lensing does to the CMB. So this is temperature, E modes, and B modes. We assume there is no tensor contribution from the inflation. Of course, it's poorly visible. This plot is due to Duncan Hansen many, many years ago, but it's still good, still true. So this is the unlensed CMB, what is in the last scattering surface. If you apply lensing to it, it changes a little bit. So if you look at this cold spot, you see it's slightly magnified, it gets a little bigger. The emo is the same, it gets slightly stretched. It's because there is some lump of matter which is doing the gravitational lensing, and the whole thing is magnified. The second effect is creation of the B modes in the CMB from the E modes. Okay, so how do you measure this effect? Two things were shown on the board before. There is a generation of the lensing B modes. There are these effects in the temperature and E modes, which manifests itself as smoothing of the peaks in the power spectrum. And you can go into higher point statistics. You can do so-called lensing reconstruction, which gives you an alternative way how to measure this effect. So there are two, in some sense, different ways how you can get it from the power spectrum, from the higher point function, and that will be used quite often in this talk. Let me say again why we care about gravitational lensing at all. So because it's sensitive to this growth of structure at fairly low redshift, it's sensitive to physics, which CMB normally isn't sensitive to. So it's sensitive to masses of neutrinos, it's sensitive to exact details of dark energy and other physical parameters. These B modes, which are generated by gravitational lensing, they act as a noise which is hiding your primordial BMOS, the BMOS from inflation, which you are trying to measure and figure out what is the energy scale at which the inflation happened. And of course, once you get the gravitational lensing maps, you can cross-correlate them with maps of galaxies, with maps of weak lensing, and that gives you another handle on cosmology. But more importantly, it allows you to constrain some systematics and nuisance parameters of your detector. So for example, galaxy bias when you're correlating with the galaxy maps and such. So last thing I want to mention in the introduction, there is a lot of work going into the preparation for the so-called CMB stage 4 experiment, which should be the ultimate ground-based experiment. There are tens of people working on it. There are roughly 2 meetings a year where things are discussed. So if you're interested, there's a website, cmbstage4.org, so you can join if you're interested. Preliminary specs, they're still in a state of flow, but it should be something like 40% of the sky measured with 1 arc minute resolution, with 1 microkelvin arc minute noise, something like that. And these will be great for gravitational lensing measurements. To show what I mean, this is a plot of the gravitational lensing potential power spectrum as a function of angular scale, angular multiple here, where the signal is shown in the blue curve. Currently with Planck, we are able to get to these noise levels using the quadratic reconstruction. With CMB stage 4, we'll be able to push by roughly 2 orders of magnitude and be signal to noise limited at roughly L of 800 or so. So there will be a great gain in knowledge in this experiment, and it will be all great. What this topic will be centered on is now we have these great measurements of the CMB power spectrum, and from them we are able to detect something about the lensing potential. So what can we do with it, and what can we learn? Before I move on, is there any question with the introduction, or everybody's okay, everybody knows? Good. So first, let me talk about Planck data, which we have, and the tension, which is in there. So just as an introduction, one way how you can find that something is wrong with Planck lensing data is you can introduce this phenomenological parameter A lens and add it on top of your 6 standard lambda CDN parameters. So you have 7 parameter extension. And this parameter just takes your usual lambda CDN lensing potential and it scales it by this A lens parameter. So in some sense, you're just allowing the amplitude of lensing potential to fly up and down. When you take the Planck data, you constrain all the parameters. You find that A lens is 1.22 plus minus 0.10, which means you're roughly 2.2 sigma away from the lambda CDN value of 1.
So is that from the 2-point function or the 4-point function or everything?
This is, I don't remember where this number exactly is. I think it's from the 2-point function.
Oh.
But I would have to go back to the Planck paper, what exactly, because there are several values flying around. But it's roughly a 2-point something sigma. I will have a different number later.
So this is the 2-point function.
It is a 2-point.
Okay.
4-point function is like the central value is nearly exactly 1 and the error bar is smaller.
Is it smaller?
Yeah, that's true, yes. So there you do something different, but it's like with a 4-point function, it's 0.95 plus minus 0.04.
Okay.
So that's
so there's no tension.
Well, maybe something.
Okay.
Merely what it is.
So the problem is A lens is, for example, it's changing only the amplitude. And so you can imagine that your model for dark energy is doing something weirder to the lensing potential, which you don't capture by just changing A lens. Right? So that's one of the things we want to look into. With A-lens, at least for me, it's kind of difficult to get some physical feeling for what it's exactly doing because it's changing all these multiples and, okay. And it's not clear how you want to do comparison of this constraint with lensing reconstruction. So let me introduce you a better way how to look into all these tensions. But before we get into the better way, let's rehash the standard way. So you have a cosmological model. Here it's lambda CDN with 6 parameters. And this cosmological model tells you how your unlensed CMB should look like and how your lensing potential should look like. Once you have these two, you can just do the lensing and predict how the lensed CMB should look like. And you can take that and compare against the data. Now, what we suggest instead is to allow for an arbitrary lensing potential. So you introduce some new parameters theta I, which determine the lensing potential. And we say, okay, so the unlensed CMB seems to be pretty well consistent with lambda CDM, so we still describe it in terms of 6 lambda CDM parameters. But now what is important, the lensing potential is completely independent of these guys. Right? So an A lens, lensing potential depends on these guys and on something, some new parameters. But now we say, no, lensing potential is only dependent on these. And so these, when you measure them, you're essentially measuring the lensing potential itself. Right? So now this has a clear physical interpretation. You know what it is. You can compare it. It's nice and sweet. You just rehash the advantages. Now you can say, you can allow for arbitrary lensing potential. You're not bound by lambda CDM predictions. You can do anything to lensing potential that you want. It's beyond changing just the amplitude. And it will turn out that there is no strong correlation between the, we call them lensed parameters and unlensed parameters. Well, let me just repeat. So these are lensed, unlensed parameters. These are lensed parameters. I will repeat it quite often. And so there is not much correlation between these in the data. So you can think about them as independent. And that allows you to think easily about what is going on and what is constraining what.
Do you want to use two-point function or four-point function or whatever?
Both.
Okay.
Right, so here you can use these for four-point function too.
So does I mean like different scales?
Oh yeah, it's indexed. So you can, here. Right, so what do we do in practice? Is lensing potential is some expansion around fiducial value, which we choose something like Planck lambda CDM. Then we choose exponential to make sure that the lensing potential is positive. Then we choose some combination of several parameters, theta I, which are indexed by this I. For this talk, it will be important for this section, we choose 2. So 2 is the number we allow for changes in the amplitude and changes in the slope. And we are searching whether there is a better fit to Planck data in this extended model than just changing the slope. Right, and what we do in practice, we choose KLs in such a way that these are the principal components of the lensing potential measured by the Planck data. So you have Planck temperature data, they tell you you can measure lensing potential in some way. We do Fisher forecast, we find principal components, and that's what we do. Okay, everybody okay with principal components and these things? Good. So if you take a look at how they look like in multiple space, this is the first mode, it's mostly amplitude at around 80. And this is the slope mode, the theta 2.
Maybe just one quick question. So your claim is that the parameters theta I are completely independent of lambda CDM, but the thing you're expanding around is completely dependent on lambda CDM.
So it's on fiducial model. Your results will not change on your choice of fiducial model, right? It will be just shift.
I guess so, but also the principal components are determined by what you can measure, which is determined by lambda CDM in some sense, right?
I don't understand the question.
Well, I mean the CL55 fiducial has got to go somewhere into your definition, right?
Right, so you choose some fiducial model, you do expansion on that. And if you are worried about that the fiducial model is wrong, then we test the sensitivity. Well, so first thing we tested is we choose a different fiducial model. And the results don't change first. And a second, you can go beyond just two principal components and you can do beyond slope, like running over running, running over running over running, and things don't depend on that. So you're fairly consistent. Our results are stable with respect to these issues, like how you choose the fiducial model. But if there are any remaining issues, we can talk about it offline. Right, so how you can alternatively prove tension in the lensing sector, you can just run your MCMC with 6 unlensed parameters and some number of the lensing parameters. And you can get 2 constraints on the lensing potential. One is directly, and one is a lambda CDM prediction from the measured AS, NS, and so on. Right? So this is assuming lambda CDM. It's a consistency check on lambda CDM. And if you go into the data, and you actually get the constraints, this is what you get. So this is roughly your amplitude mode. This is your slope mode. This is a constraint from the TT directly to lensing. So you see The first component is somewhat constrained, the second is essentially unconstrained. This is what you would expect. So we had to choose some theoretical prior. Our results are not sensitive to the theoretical prior. And this is the lambda CDM prediction. And so you see directly the tension, they're discrepant. Now, because we have this physical interpretation for what theta 1 and theta 2 are, we can just go on and directly measure it from the four-point function. And so once we do four-point function, we get the four-point function is preferring this values of the Lansing potential. Right? And so if you look at this picture, what it says is a Lansing from the four-point function is consistent with what lambda CDM would predict, but there is something weird going on with the TT power spectrum.
What are these extra n parameters?
Yes, so those are, you mean these theta 1 and theta 2, or? Those? Yes, so we introduced these new parameters, which are directly parameterizing the Lansing potential. So we are agnostic about how the Lansing potential looks like, and we say it can be different from what lambda CDM would tell you. Okay.
What's the physical interpretation?
So physical interpretation is it's some measurement of a Lansing potential.
So your theta 1 is like an A lens.
Yeah.
Theta 2 is like a slope of A lens.
That's correct, yes.
So you're just parameterizing the basically dark matter power spectrum. Well, the nonlinear dark matter power, but I guess I shouldn't say. The late time dark matter power spectrum, right?
Well, there could be some expansion effects too, right? But essentially, yes, you're parameterizing low redshift physics and how it affects the Lansing potential. That's correct.
So the question is, I mean, there should be more information than just two-point function of phi in the four-point function of temperature. So I guess you assume Gaussianity of phi field to do this?
That's correct, yes. We assume that the phi field.
Would there be, maybe that's the thing, that maybe it's not Gaussian? Which, I mean, for nonlinear structures, we know it is not Gaussian.
Yeah, but the problem that most of the lensing is going on these fairly large scales.
Well, I don't know, what k does that translate to?
Also, I was peeking at like, you know, like 100 or something, which is like degree-ish scales, and so that's like, you know, comparable to the horizon scale at.
We have 100 at the same, but I mean, this is at, I mean, look, closer distance, so.
Oh, right.
Right, so it's a redshift roughly 2, right? And so it's tens of megaparsec, something like that?
It should be like 100 or something. Right, I mean, like, so the last scattering surface is at like 10, and so redshift of like 1 or 2 should be like half that or something.
Like 50 megaparsecs.
Yeah.
So, don't these corrections must affect the fits to the angular power spectrum? BAO fits.
Yeah, we're just looking at the CMB data for starts. We're trying to see whether changes to the Lansing potential can explain all the data.
Does it?
Well. So, you cannot really decrease the tension between what is the Lansing preferred by the TT power spectrum and the Lansing which is preferred by the Lansing reconstruction by allowing for any Lansing potential. So it doesn't look like it's Lansing what is doing the tension.
The Hubble constant is determined to 1% CMB. So
is that effect?
I guess it.
Yeah, so what
there's a tension there.
I'm potentially worried about that there might still be something we are not doing well with Planck data. And so that might have an effect on the Hubble tension, right? But I will get to what this might mean in a bit. Right, so let's
see, sorry, one more question.
No problem.
So you said that theta 1 and theta 2 were the principal components
of the TT, yes.
Like, so why then is this strong correlation between like the parameters? So I would have thought that
the green one, or
yeah, the green one, yeah.
Yeah, so the green one is the lambda CDM prediction, right? So let me go back to this picture. So when you do your MCMC, you get constraints on 8 parameters. You have 2 parameters which constrain the lensing. That's the red curve.
So it's independent of the data.
And then you get 6 constraints on the unlensed parameters. And based on these constraints, you can predict how the lensing potential should look like if these are the true parameters and lambda CDM is valid. And that's the green curve.
Okay, well, I'll ask later.
So in a sense, it's the lambda CDM prior that it's not actually a measurement.
That's not a measurement, yes.
Okay, I see.
And why is the central value not 0, 0?
Yeah.
Oh, it's the fiducial model, right?
Oh, okay, so the fiducial model is not
exactly 0, 0, yeah. So the thing is, the fiducial model is the lambda CDM fitted to the TT data.
Okay.
And so it's a combination of green and red. So it's somewhere in between them, right? Because it has lensing. There's lensing which is pulling the parameters a little bit. And so once you plug in lambda CDM predictions, it shifts the green contour a little bit. And the direction is given by what AS and omega C are doing to the data. Right? So if I have a plot somewhere where you have projection of AS changes to the lensing potential on this plane, and it's essentially this direction. So this is uncertainty and AS in some sense, and omega C score. Okay, so now how significant is this thing? You could be fancy, you could evaluate significance in 2 dimensions, but we are simple people, so we just project it in 1D. 1D projection. This is from the TT barospectrum. We always include the low temperature on polarization. I will comment a little bit on that later. And from the PP, and now this is 2.5 sigma. So it looks like the tension is 2.5 sigma. Now, there was this question how stable this is with various choices we've made. You can try adding the polarization data. It decreases the tension a little bit, but not by much, because the polarization constraints on lensing are not that strong yet. And so the TT is really driving the tension. I talked about changing the prior. I said on a previous slide, we used the low L polarization. You might be worried that Planck, when they are working on the low L polarization likelihood, our results might be sensitive. They are not. We checked that. And as I said before, we allowed for running of the lensing potential, and it didn't change anything. So the tension is there. It looks like it's real. And we have to worry about that. Now, when we have the constraints on theta 1, theta 2, we can make these fun plots where you have posterior constraints on lensing potential from the TT power spectrum. Those are the red curves here. And you can compare it against the reconstruction data. Those are the black points. And you see the tension is roughly here, where the red curve is above the black points. Right? Of course, there are just 2 degrees of freedom in the red curve, so everything is correlated. You should really look only at this part of the plot, because everything to the right of here is prior dominated. And it doesn't mean that here you are very strongly constraining the data. It's just that the principal components which you're using to describe the lensing potential are essentially 0 here, because you're not sensitive. Don't overinterpret that as a very good measurement. Good, so what about the data is responsible for this? What is shown here are the data residuals of the Planck TT, which are binned with some bins, with respect to the best fit lambda CDM model. All right, so now you allow for arbitrary lensing potential, and you can improve the fit a little bit. So this is the best fit with arbitrary lensing potential. It improves by chi squared of roughly 5. And most of the improvement is coming from this very tight L range between 1300 and 1500. So if you have a favorite theory, which is changing CMB at exactly these scales, that's your time to shine. At the same time, once you allow for changes in lensing potential, which are not tied to the cosmological parameters, you can shift omega C squared and AS to better fit the low temperature anomaly, so that it's also improving the fit a little bit. Now let's go to the question of what actually it is. Of course, it's 2 point something sigma, so it could be a fluke. These things happen once in a while. My favorite is that it's something about the Planck foreground subtraction. So you know, if you look at the CMB maps from Planck and SPT, they agree within reason. And so it might be that the Planck, which is capturing region with more foregrounds, are doing something wrong in there, and then it biases their temperature power spectrum measurements. And that's one of the things I want to look into in the nearest time. And of course, it'll be something else interesting physics. If you have the theory, go for it. Are there any questions about this section? Because now I'm going to switch gears.
Question. So I guess if you add ineffective, does that help with attention or not?
Ineffective.
That's the thing that the Hubble people talk about.
Yeah, we didn't look at ineffective specifically. So our experience so far is that changes to the unlensed CMB don't really help because these unlensed parameters are uncorrelated with the lensing, right? In a sense, whatever physical-
There must be some correlation. You're measuring one function, which is the TT power, the two-point function, and if you add enough parameters, there would be correlation. So
it's the smearing of the peaks, presumably, which is driving the all of this, right?
No, but I mean, there was this jump, whatever this thing. This is just a TT power string, right? So
yes.
And you're saying there's a jump somewhere at 1300 to 1500. So I don't know what that jump is. Well, I guess you're saying it's oscillatory.
Yeah, the oscillatory residuals, which are here, so you see it's going down, up, down, up. It sort of looks like smearing of the peaks.
Yeah. But I actually don't know what that would end effective or something. We just suppress everything uniformly.
No, that's a good comment. We should take a look at that. Any other question?
Seems to me whatever you do to the potential, it's very difficult to see how you can get the two to come together.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point, yes.
How would you do this? You change the thing, you split the angular power spectrum fit away from the lensing. So, how could you possibly? But it's only 2.5 sigma. Should we worry about this?
I'm not the best expert on 2.5 sigma. We can make a vote. Who thinks 2.5 sigma is too big?
That's perfect.
Right?
How many
of
the funding, but that doesn't mean the model's wrong. So, perfect.
This is being recorded.
How much of the emails
were? This is not part of the physics. 5 sigma, you don't worry about anything particularly to 5 sigma.
Well, the good thing is there are these future experiments that are coming. It should be much better, and we'll be getting probably more frequencies, which will help us with the foregrounds. So let's hope that the future is able to determine which side is right.
The Hubble concentration is now close to 4 sigma by recent papers.
Okay, we can talk about this later. I don't know about the recent one. I know 3.0 sigma or something. Anyway, so now let's get to the ugly part, which is that the lensing correlates data. When you have the unlensed CMB, all the data seem to suggest that the unlensed CMB is Gaussian, which means the statistic is very simple, right? When you, for example, have the E-mode power and E-mode power, then only the same multiples are correlated, and the angular scale is decoupled, which is perfect for doing any kind of analysis. Now, when you have lensing, this is no longer true. The reason is if you have a small patch of a sky where there is some temperature and polarization E-modes, then if you have, you have some lensing, which is lensing this patch of the sky, and the amount of lensing in front of this patch of the sky is some stochastic variable, right? How much lensing there is, you cannot tell because it's given by some random process. And so you can roughly get how much lensing you would expect, but there is always some standard deviation around that. There is some variance. And if there is more lensing in front of your patch, there will be more smoothing of the peaks, and there will be more B-modes generated by lensing, and vice versa. But because of this effect, there is some correlation between temperature and B-modes and E-modes, and everything gets correlated. And the analysis gets a little bit more difficult. So let me talk about an analytic model which can capture this variant. And Kendrick is an instrumental figure in this model as well. The way it works is you take your two variables. Here it's shown an example of the EE power spectra. You take a look at how much they depend on lensing. Those are these two derivatives. You take a look at how much lenses oscillate around this mean value, which is predicted by the cosmological model, and you just sum it over all scales. Okay? So things depend on lensing. Lenses are uncertain. It leads to correlation of everything. This is a small effect on top of the diagonal terms, but when you plot the correlation matrix, it looks like that. It's very nice. It looks good in the talks. You can see that the correlations are at the 10 to minus 3 level, but the correlation is over a large number of multiples. And so if you add it up, you get order one effect.
Sorry, you killed the diagonal. I mean, diagonal should be the biggest.
Okay. Yeah, so diagonal is one, right? Diagonal is not here, because if there was diagonal, you would just see this like line here, and everything would be black. Right. And so the reason why you see these, this patchwork is because you have scales where there are peaks, froths, peaks, froths, peaks, froths. And because of lensing, if you increase lensing, all the peaks go down in a coherent manner. And so the peaks are correlated with the peaks. That's this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy. Peak with a peak. Froth all go up together or go down. They're correlated. So it's this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy. And peaks and froth are anti-correlated. And so together they make this nice checkboard. Good. So is there any question about the model, how it works? What is the physical interpretation of why things are correlated? No? I have some very smart audience here. So let's take a step back and think about when you take a physical measurement, what is limiting the precision with which you can measure things, right? So one source of uncertainty is instrumental noise, foregrounds, all the kind of stuff experimentalists worry about, and theorists not so much. Then you probably know that there is a cosmic variance of the unlensed CMB, which is giving you some floor beyond which you cannot go and which is limiting your precision. Now we have this new source of noise, which is the sample variance of the lenses. Lenses are created by some random process, so that's a new uncertainty which is entering your analysis. And not only is it a new noise, it also correlates, which means it complicates things. Okay. So now we will look at something like CMB stage 4. And how important these effects are for measurements. So one way how we can do it, we will look at these unlensed parameters and lensing parameters, which means we will be sort of model independent. And now I just want to warn you, these theta I now will be principal components which are modified to reflect the CMB stage 4. It's a different principal component than in the case of Planck. And now we just simulate data, run MCMC with some likelihood, which either has or doesn't have this lensing covariance, and we compare how they differ. So we are theorists, and this is just a simple project to get some physical intuition. So we're using full sky. We split the likelihood into the largest scales and smaller scales, where inspired by Planck, we set the difference at L of 30. The reason why we have to do this is because the multiples at the largest scales are not Gaussian. You don't have enough modes, so you have to correctly capture the Wishart distribution. Fortunately, there is not much lensing covariance because lensing is not really doing much at the largest scales. So you can do this split, you can consider them independently, and at smaller scales, everything looks nicely Gaussian because you have plenty modes, so you can just use the Gaussian distribution. Okay, so that's the likelihood. We can do big MCMC with some unlensed parameters, some lensed parameters. I just want you to take two things from here. So one is that really there is not much correlation between the unlensed guys and the lensed guys. At least these six unlensed guys, so lambda CDM and the lensing. And the physical reason why this happens was stated here. These parameters, none of them looks like smearing of the peaks or generation of the B-modes, so there is not much correlation in the data. Now, the only thing which really happens, the only effect, is you change constraints on the two best constraints principal components.
Sorry, is this a two-point function or a four-point function or everything?
So this is just two-point function just for the moment. We start with a two-point function, we understand that to death, and then we figure out what happens if you have a four-point function. Right, so constraints on the two best constraint principal components are degraded. So if you don't include this source of noise, you're too optimistic in your constraints, which is, of course, not surprising, right? So you're doing some measurements of the lensing potential, and at some point you get to the level where you have to worry about the fact that the lenses are having some interesting intrinsic sample variance. And so only for two principal components, even for CMB stage 4, this effect is important.
Is there a prior, you know, for like amplitude of the...
No, for CMB stage 4, you don't need a prior for this.
It's just surprising that the figure of area blows up by factors of, you know, I mean, factors of, I guess, a few or something. I mean, at least for me, it's been surprising.
Oh, you mean even this one?
Yeah, right. And like, the area is like several times larger. You know, but you were saying that the covariance is at the 10 to the minus 3 level. I guess I'm just...
But they're 10 to minus 3 over like a large number of multiples, right? And so they add up because the changes are coherent. And if you, for example, take a look at like the large scale modes, then, for example, experimental noise drops down and these adds up. And so eventually, if you have enough modes which are measured precisely enough, these things become important. And this is exactly what happens. Right? But it's CMB stage 4, so it's 7 years in the future still. Good. So those are the measurements, what it does. You have to worry about this only for these two. And so some of the consequences. So of course, one of them is you have this new source of noise. And so your constraint on cosmological parameters, if you assume some particular cosmological model, are degraded. In Lambda CDM, that's my favorite example because you can actually see it. This is constraints on omega CH squared and AS. If you neglect this source of noise, and if you include the source of noise. So this particular combination is driven by how well you understand lensing of the CMB, which is understandable because in Lambda CDM, everything which changes lensing, or more or less, is AS and omega CH squared. And so this is what lensing gives you in Lambda CDM. If you look at more complicated models, you add dark energy equation of CW or neutrinos, what you find is typically there is one parameter combination which is limited by lensing. That's the thing which is limited by the lower lensing, which is the theta 1 and theta 2. The standard deviation is roughly doubled. So roughly half of the noise is coming from this lens sample variance. But if you look at, for example, one-dimensional constraints on neutrinos, you often miss this effect because of degeneracies and marginalizations. Right. If you're interested in just simple plane constraints on neutrinos, for example, it doesn't play a role. But if you're trying to make some forecasts on combinations of with different experiments, for example, you should start worrying about these kinds of effects. Right. So that was just a two-point function. Now we get to the four-point function. What happens if you want to combine two-point function and four-point function? Right. We know that now in two-point function, the lensing, two pieces of lensing are measured extremely well. And so now if you just naively combine two-point function and four-point function and you neglect that they are correlated, you would be double counting information, right? Because these two measurements are correlated, you would be saying, I measured the same thing twice, so I'm twice as better in measuring something. But that's not true because you just measured it twice. So importance of this effect, for example, in Lambda CDM with neutrinos and W is roughly 20%. So it's not crazy, but it's not completely negligible. This understanding of what is going on can help you to make a simple forecasting methodology, which avoids this double counting. And the way it works is you just, when you have a Fisher forecast and you calculate your derivatives of the data with respect to the cosmological parameters, you just evaluate them at fixed lensing potential. And that prevents you from double counting the lensing information because now there is no change in lensing potential with the cosmological parameters in the power spectrum side. And you can neglect the non-Gaussian covariance, so it's really, really as simple as the standard Fisher. It's just you don't double count. And how well it works is shown here for neutrinos and omega curvature, which is the famous case, which is really hard to get. The full correct analysis is shown here in black. The simple lensing approximation, which was presented in the previous slide, is here in blue. And what people often do is they take the unlensed CMB and they say they can really measure unlensed CMB and they can measure the lensing potential and they're uncorrelated are here in green. So again, you do some 20% mistake if you do this effective approach. Good. And of course, now we have two measurements of one or two modes of the lensing potential from the two-point function and from the four-point function. So we can again compare them. Right? You do a consistency check. Now the nice thing is that the major source of noise is this lens sample variance. And so if you compare them, it drops out. And you have a cosmic variance cancellation. And so this check is actually much stronger than you would naively say. That's very useful because, for example, before you want to do something like the lensing, you want to make sure that lensing in your data set is consistent. So you can just go, make sure everything is consistent by doing this test, and then you can happily go and do the lensing. To make sure that this can at least work in practice, we have a simple sanity check. So we simulated 50 CMB skies. We run 50 MCMCs to get this consistency check. So this is some combination of these lensing principle components, which is optimized for this sort of comparison. These are essentially, where is it? Yeah, so it's essentially this combination, the most affected one. And you measure it from the, you measure it from the power spectra, you measure it from the lensing potential, and you see what I said. So you have a fairly big uncertainty on either measurement, but uncertainty on n differences is much smaller than if they were uncorrelated. And so just a very simple toy example. If you in TMB stage 4 see something like this, you get a consistency mode from the two-point function and from the four-point function, and they are this distant. Then naively you would say it's like 2.4 sigma, but because of the correlation, it's actually 5 sigma. Okay, and so the good thing is these consistency checks are good and they're going to get even better. And it looks like I ended up almost, so let me summarize. It's pretty useful when you want to think about CMB data to split what is coming from the unlensed part of a CMB and what is coming from the lensed part of a CMB. If you do it for Planck data, you figure out there is this roughly 2.5 sigma tension, which doesn't seem to be explainable in terms of lensing. For something like CMB stage 4, you have to worry about these lens sample variance effects, which can bite you in some cases, and consistency checks are great and everybody should do them. Okay, that's all I have. Thank you.
So you call this consistency checks, but another way to market them is this measurement of non-Gaussianity in dark matter potential. So. Because, I mean, the four-point function and two-point functions are not consistent with each other. That's the definition of non-Gaussian. That is, that's one type of non-Gaussian.
Of course, it's a matter of your right?
Yeah, we are.
It's always the case, right? Always. All the non-Gaussian could be due to foregrounds or real. But it could be real.
Could be.
But with the new data coming out, I could get rid of the two-point question.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
For particular data.
Sorry, just to quickly comment on the Ionisches thing. The original way that the issue was phrased was that the two-point function was the one that was inconsistent, the four-point function was the consistent one. So that's, it would be a weird way for...
Right, I mean, I guess there are three different... there are three different things, I think, that there is one, if just lambda CDM linear theory is all, as the one thing is concerned. The other is, you measure lensing independently from two-point function and independently from four-point function, that would be. I think he was talking about, I mean, lensing, measuring lensing from two-point function and from four, because this theta one and theta two, you consider them independent parameters and you measure it from these two different ways. And in principle, if you get different results, then it could be due to, so I guess I'm saying if the blue and red are inconsistent, that could be due to non-Gaussianity. Now, if the green and blue or red, either of those are inconsistent, that would be just that lambda CDM is wrong. So that's a separate statement, right? But just blue and green being inconsistent, sorry, blue and red being inconsistent, that could be non-Gaussianity. And I mean, at 15 megaparsec, I guess you could have like few percent effects, so I don't know.
You're arguing about something that might go away.
But it's always the case, right?
It's called ambulance chasing.
One comment is that the E mode peaks are much more sensitive to the E mode power spectrum is constrained to theta 1 and theta 2 better than the temperature power spectrum. So
in the future.
Yeah. So when the E mode peaks get measured, it's. If this discrepancy is real, it'd get a lot more significant.
Yeah, and once you start getting B modes, right? That also sure. So that's one way.
So the lensing kernel peaks around 1 to 2-ish mm-hmm. in redshift. So do you have any thoughts about actually measuring the matter? Like the density in the same field at those redshifts and actually comparing it to like the structures we actually know are there in the actual sky.
Yes,
as opposed to just looking at
so the problem is that lensing is getting contributions from not only 1 to 2, but the kernel goes all the way down,
yeah.
Right? And so you can do cross correlations, for example, to get like some sort of three-dimensional information. Measured with, you cross-correlate with something which is peaking at redshift 1.5, 1, 1.5, 2, but there is still this long tail up to redshift 7, maybe, I don't remember. So there are actually people trying to talk, maybe you can use this to get something about reionization, where you just really cross-correlate everything in front of it, and remove it, and what is left is like these like super high redshift.
I don't think that's the strongest way to read annotation, but okay.
Any other questions?
All right, let's thank Pavel again.
Thank you.